Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is May 8th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, we had a great luncheon in Palm Springs. We had Slayer Report subscribers joint with Going Organic magazine, and it was very interesting to see the two groups come together. All the skeptics, who of course were on the Slayer Report subscriber side, and the Going Organic group was full of entrepreneurs focused on wellness and fresh food and beauty products. It was quite a combination. Dr. Laura Thompson joined us, as did John Rappaport. It's always wonderful to see them. And it was a reminder to me that we need to use our knowledge of the real deal to increase our joy and not to make us miserable. Coming up events, June 28th to 29th is the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization in San Mateo. I'm out in California now. I'll be out here for the next 2 months. And I'm really enjoying being here at Sea Lane and just in the Bay Area and seeing so many good friends in the Bay Area. We're working to organize a reception for the Saturday evening for subscribers who attend the conference. That's by popular request of the subscribers, so we'll see if we can get that to come together. Our theme tonight is Let Us Pray. There's several reasons. First, of course, is we had a Supreme Court decision that now says local towns can elect to use prayer before the opening of a meeting. I think that's a great decision. I'm a believer that the Declaration of Independence says that our freedom comes to us by divine authority. So I always welcome any opportunity to invite the divine in, particularly in a governmental situation. But there's another feeling I have very strong feelings about, which is, you know, local officials need to be able to decide with local populations to decide and control much more locally, including whether or not they, you know, and how they want to run the town. So the idea of the federal government telling a group of elected officials and the people in a jurisdiction how they should run their meetings to me is deeply offensive. So, you know, I think that's all best left to local control. Second, as we look at our current circumstance, I find the most productive thing I can do in many situations is to pray. And so I do. I just drove from Tennessee to the Ozarks, to Texas, through New Mexico and Arizona, over to Palm Springs, and then up through Pasadena to San Francisco. And as I watch the land just become more and more dry from drought, I assure you I was inspired to do a lot of praying without ceasing. You can do a lot on the interstate. But whatever's happening, please realize you and I are not helpless. Even if we don't have time or money or ideas to give, we can always say a prayer. And I have certainly believe, and I have certainly seen it happen, that when enough people start to pray, miracles do happen. Money and markets. Last night, I did a coast-to-coast economic roundtable with George Norrie, George Ure, and Gerald Celente. Very interesting. The U.S. economy clearly is in a contraction. First quarter numbers look very bad. The only consumer spending that was up was utilities because the weather was terrible. And we all, you know, my utility bill was certainly up. And healthcare, thank you, Obamacare. Income inequity, inequality is really taking its toll on the U.S. economy. I wrote a commentary called Connect the Dots. It's up on the blog, and it talks about the cost of centralization and the cost of privilege. And I would say we've reached a point where privilege is really, and trying to manage the economy with politics instead of markets is really, we've reached a tipping point. New study from Brookings, it's also up on the blog, U.S. businesses are being destroyed faster than they're being created. The data is a little bit dated, but everything I'm seeing on the ground says that the trend has continued. That's a big, big problem. And I think jobs, income, small business, all are going to be major topics in the mid-year election coming up in November. We see an article in the Wall Street Journal that's linked up on the blog. Frustration rises over crowdfunding rules. It's been 2 years since the Job Act. We still don't have the crowdfunding rules. drumbeats of war, the Russia situation continues. Note corporations, interestingly enough, are playing a positive role, telling the Germans, German corporations telling the Germans, the American corporations telling the Americans, Russian corporations telling the Russians they don't want to fight, can't make money fighting. Who would have thought corporations would be a force for peace? But there's no doubt about it. The more our economies intertwine with investment, and particularly equity investment instead of debt investment, it's going to build cooperation. It's going to build the sort of entanglements that keep the peace. We see the U.S. now saying they're going to unleash the IRS and the new laws related to tax havens and sort of banking to target Russian banks. This is going to be very interesting. As we've seen the Russian stock market down, now we're seeing the S&P down, the dollar down, precious metals down. Oh my goodness. It really, you know, we really are getting to a point where the pressures for war increase as the economy slows down. But of course, war just makes it worse. We're seeing now Vietnam and China face off in the South China Sea. The amount of shipping and the global economy that runs through the South China Sea is very significant, so don't be surprised to see that continue. We now see one of the PM's advisors in Japan saying that they need to revise the constitution so that they don't have to be pacifist. And, you know, again, the drumbeats of war on us. The housing market is in the news, including because Yellen's current comments, Chairwoman Yellen of the Federal Reserve, notes that housing is slowing down. We see FHA fees jumping tremendously. That's going to be very dampening to the market. We also see plans described in the blog last week, the week before. The federal government continues to work on a proposal to re-engineer Freddie and Fannie. Meantime, Freddie Mac moves into the trailer park. They're now going to finance trailer homes. Interesting. I'm going to talk about Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway later on. Berkshire Hathaway, longtime investor for many years, and Freddie Mac, once upon a time, and now owner of Clayton Homes, one of the big trailer makers. So it's interesting to see, and if you look at how Berkshire Hathaway stands to benefit on some of the re-engineering plans, and as well, Freddie financing the trailer park. Every time you turn around these days, you see Berkshire Hathaway up to their eyeballs in housing. Food. Vermont becomes the first state to pass GMO labeling laws. Jeffrey Smith did a video. It's up on the blog to talk about that. And we've invited Jeffrey to join us in June to give us an update on what's happening in the battle over GMOs. Climate change, yeah. There was more pronouncements from the White House and the politicians on climate change. Every time they do it, I get very frustrated, so I decided to put up two video on chemtrails and a whole series of other links related to what is really going on with global spraying until somebody who mentions the word climate change is willing to discuss global spraying and explain what the two have to do with each other. I really don't want to hear any more drivel on climate change. Anyway, check those links out. They're some of the most negative information about what's going on in the global economy. It's a very dark agenda, but it's worth contemplating because I think, you know, again, as my pastor once said about reality, if we can face it, God can fix it, but we need to face it. The markets have continued to chop sideways, and we put the two charts up on the are up on the video. And what you see is we've seen the S&P start to trade down, equity markets to start to trade down, particularly with the momentum stocks really trading down, technology and the Russell 2000, and bonds continue to surprise and do reasonably well. So it looks like we're way overdue for a correction. Chuck and I talk a lot about in the interview, and I encourage you to listen to that more on the interview in a second. Our hero this week is Mayor Adam Sanchez. I had a very inspiring opportunity last Friday to listen to the mayor of Desert Hot Springs, which is a town of 27,000 contiguous to Palm Springs, make a presentation at a chamber lunch about what he's been doing and the mission of Desert Hot Springs to be a real capital of wellness. They have remarkable healing waters, very famous, and I was staying at Two Bunch Palms, which is one of the spas within the area. And Mayor Sanchez gave a very inspiring presentation on sort of the nuts and bolts of building a community where everyone is encouraged to be healthy and well. It's really a remarkable evidence of leadership. And of course, at the luncheon, he came to join us at the luncheon on Sunday, along with Kevin Kelly, who is the CEO of Two Bunch Palms. And we had a rousing, another fellow who with deep history in planning joined us, including planning, work on the planning commission at Desert Hot Springs. And so we had a very interesting luncheon talking about sort of place-based development and how it relates to health and wellness. And inspired by that experience, I put up a commentary on the blog, which I encourage you to read, called Good Leadership. Please, this year in the elections, pay attention to the local elections. Remember, America's just 3,100 counties. If we have excellent leadership in every one of the 3,100, I assure you it will be a major break on what's going on the national level. So please pay attention to your state and local elections this year. Another runner-up for here I want to mention is a woman named Jennifer Bartley, who saw an appalling arrest of a homeless advocate in Baltimore and was and put up the $15,000 to bail the advocate out of jail. It's a wonderful story of somebody who decided, you know, they were going to make a difference. Ask Catherine. A couple questions. One question that I've gotten several times, and it came in again, was what did I think of an article? It's an article about Malaysia Airlines and the fact that some of the business people who were killed were holders of patents, supposedly or allegedly, that somehow would then benefit the Blackstone Group and Rothschild. This article is terribly muddled if you look at its description of who owns what and how it all works. It's very, very muddled and a lot of conjecture. I do think the fact that there were 20 employees of one of the leading conductors of tiny semiconductors who had just announced their defense application and were on their way to China, you know, raises some very important questions about whether that had anything to do with the disappearance. But I think the kind of conjecture in the article is not sufficiently documented and is not very useful. So I certainly didn't post it on the blog, and I would tend to dismiss it. I think this is one of those situations where there's tremendous amounts of unanswered questions, and it's going to take a lot of pulling of facts out to try and figure out what happened. Okay, dear Catherine, here are two questions that I have for you. For years, economies around the world seemed to be perfectly following what had been predicted by the peak oil theorists as the price of energy continued rising. But now we're not seeing the same accelerated movement towards the dire economic consequences that had really been predicted from peak oil. With that in mind, how much of what's been told to us by the peak oil experts was legitimate, and how much was myth? In addition, do you think the powers that be may have created, endorsed the peak oil movement from behind the scenes? And if so, what do you believe the motivation was? I think there was a lot of effort, in fact, to create and endorse the peak oil movement from behind the scenes. And that was, if you listen to the Solari reports we've done with Jim Norman, I think there was a real effort to get the price of oil up way above market cost and keep it there. At the same time, I do think we have a real peak everything problem, and there's a real issue before us as to how we're going to solve that. Is it going to be with new technology? Is it going to be with space exploration? Or is it going to be with population changes and diminishment of lifestyle. There are many different ways it can go. It's a complicated topic, but I think the peak everything issue is quite real. Given what is possible with renewable energy and what I believe breakthrough energy technology, I've always believed peak oil was a bit of a misleading presentation. The second question is, Alex Jones seems to be well-funded. Have you ever been concerned that he may be covertly working for the powers that be? Over the years, I've seen Alex struggle and do a lot of hard work to try and build a model which is economically sustainable. I'm not concerned that he's working for the covert forces. To a certain extent, everybody can be used. Everyone can be compromised. Those of us who operate publicly are all permitted to operate publicly. We can be hassled or slowed down. But, you know, clearly if the powers that be wanted us to not operate, we would, you know, as I said, they have the power to kill with impunity. I look at lots of people and I post lots of people who I think are controlled in a variety of ways. So, for example, I like a lot of Amy Goodman's work. At the same time, there are many topics she won't touch or censors, but she does what she can, and what she does, I think she does a lot of very useful work. Same with Alex Jones. Alex may have conflicts, he may have a point of view, but I think he's done a lot of good work. And I certainly believe, whether I'm watching Alex, whether I'm watching Amy, I can sort out the wheat from the chaff. So I think every one of us who does what they can puts a piece on the table, and we can all be discerning consumers and take what we want. So, you know, I feel that Alex Jones, I've gotten tremendous knowledge and benefits from his work, so I appreciate it. Hi, Catherine. Have you ever heard of the expanding Earth theory, the plasma core? To make a long story short, Cliff High makes a compelling argument that the Earth has a plasma core, not molten metal, and is expanding. The Earth is growing. As the Earth grows, it creates more land and replenishes the minerals within the land as it grows, a product of the plasma reaction within its core. The late Bob Chapman noted that when the Russians drilled down to 45,000 feet and discovered oil, they also discovered that the Earth replenishes the old oil reserves if given time and the reservoirs aren't damaged in any way. Give the Earth time to heal. If this is correct, peak anything is a bunch of buck. Have you any knowledge of this theory? I've read it many times, and I know many people who believe it. Whether it's true, I don't know. I do know that accessing fossil fuels is rising in cost in a variety of ways, as we have to drill lower or use more water, for example, for fracking. In the meantime, renewables are dropping in cost, and I think we're going to reach a point where renewables become very cost competitive, and that's before asking questions about breakthrough energy. Again, if you look at the hardware flying around the planet in the form of UFOs, somebody's got it. So, I just, you know, all of those combined to say, I don't think peak oil is going to be a problem in the long run, but the challenge of getting from here to there is a big one, including the fact that changing all the financial arrangements and we're talking about a very, very big change to move off the fossil fuel model, particularly because it's tied up with the currency and what the global reserve currency is. Okay, another very long question. Hello, Catherine. General observations here. You, Richard, and Joseph make my mind and imagination run pretty fast. Why do we have to be seeing effects of 17 quadrillion in derivatives? You once said there were more derivatives than the value of all goods and services. We had capacity to produce the way we were operating. I wonder how much of the derivative pile just gets canceled. What kind of valuations just expires, options and futures contracts expires only to be renewed? It's true, a lot of the derivatives can net each other out. So it's not necessarily, it's certainly not $17 quadrillion of debt. Then he goes on, you seem to be suggesting there are valuations of something that is real that allow these shadow groups to go on transacting. After all, they still have to reduce their actions and trading back to the market as it exists. Is it even transacting? Could it not be a filing cabinet somewhere canceled, as do expiring derivatives or LN miles? They create new anyway. Really appreciated the load analogy from your guest. Had thought of physics and spirit, but not physics and money. Catherine is a Coast to Coast grader classic. You have raised the bar substantially on George Norrie by bringing such guest interviews as you do to light. I was once fascinated by the net-net debt cancel graphics on the blog some time back, as well as the upside-down triangle of derivatives. It would be great to find a graphic that depicts the financial exchange valuations you are describing. It seems from the language of the market traders that must be a whole off-book market exchanges in existence. Yes, that is true. The dark pools are dark and growing. I suppose I'm asking for graphics of market trading we do not see reported, or financial banking type entities that exist but are not seen in the street corners or in the advertising when we go through life. Catherine, you're a long way from your original Coast to Coast comment on reading 20 books and not making heads or tail of the space alien story. I still cannot make heads or tails of the space alien story, so I don't think I've come very far. But he's saying, you've come a long way, baby. Well, thanks, but I don't feel like it. All I can say is read Richard Dolan. I think he's framed the uncertainty as well as it can be. And let's go to the movies. I wanted to review Warren Buffett's one of the documentaries, many documentaries on Warren Buffett's. This one is one of the Bloomberg Game Changer series. I have always been remiss in not really sitting down and studying Buffett and his career, and I suspect part of it is the corporate media has made so much hoopla about him, I tend to ignore anything that they hoopla about. But I spent some serious time over the last few months studying his investment history and current direction. One of the reasons is I've been reviewing different investment models, and the one that Buffett proposes is very similar to the one I trained in and is the one I believe in. In addition, if you look at his recent investment direction, it looks to me he's looking at the same place-based opportunity that I'm looking at and seeing. And then he started to call the public pension funds tapeworms, which seemed an unusual coincidence since that was a phrase I kind of coined, but certainly not with respect to public pension funds. I also need to, before talking with Buffett, because you all are such a great group of skeptics, I need to just put in a couple of disclaimers. First of all, on the covert side, I have a pretty good ability at this point to read in sort of what's probably going on the covert side in anybody's life and activities. You know, maybe they know about it, maybe they don't. But I think I have a pretty good sense of the covert side of what Buffett has been part of and what he's been involved in. And I'm going to just assume the worst case just to make sure, you know, that I don't mislead anybody. I'm not going to get into that tonight. My goal is not to try and illuminate the dirty part of it, anybody's history. Buffett's made money in the world as it is. So I don't mean to suggest that he has, you know, because there are ways of doing this that are not necessarily illegal. But I think Buffett has made money in the world as it is, and I don't think he had a choice. I don't think you can be a successful investor of the kind that he is and the size he is unless you deal with the world as it is. He, you know, remember, he's only one player. His power is limited. He can't change the system. So if my assessment is right, he's been remarkably clever about being 2 to 3 steps removed. So his involvement is, in most cases, I think, subtle. A few not so subtle, but in most, pretty subtle. And it's quite cleverly done. The other disclaimer I should say is that it is my guess that Buffett was involved as a board member in 1998 and having a story on me pulled by the Washington Post in a way that was quite ugly. I believe that decision or that pulling of that story cost me millions of dollars and almost cost me my life. And I'm sure if he did do that, it was, as the Godfather would say, it was just business. Anyway, so with those two disclaimers, let me say the following things, which I think are important for you to understand about Buffett's career, if this is a topic that interests you. Buffett's career spans a period when we ballooned the financial systems of this country and the globe in an extraordinary way. And if you look at that period, many fortunes were made either on the financial side or on technology, particularly information technology, which was used to re-engineer fundamental industries. And so many of the fortunes that were made on things that are disassociated from basic business. So they're making money in banking or hedge funds or LBOs, or they're making money in Silicon Valley doing, you know, developing information technology that re-engineers business. Very few people that I know during that period sat down and made money and really understood the economy bottom up. How does the money in a household work? How does the money in small business work? How does the money in a whole community full of households and small business work? And then raise that up into industry into markets for big corporations, and so on and so forth. And so where Buffett has taken the time to do that and has clearly done it by going into and after business, newspapers, textiles, furniture stores. I mean, this is a guy who's really taken the time to study, to buy, to try and fix, re-engineer, grow businesses, you know, of a very wide spectrum in very grounded basic businesses. And again, this is something that to me is worthy of great respect. I spend a lot of time driving around. I'm one of those people. I price out the math of time and money in any restaurant, in any store, in any business I walk into. I drive off the interstate. I'm immediately creating a mental map of all the income flows and capital flows and equity valuations coming out of all the businesses on the interstate. And I'm always trying to make mental maps of financial ecosystems because I spent so much time in the 90s figuring out how to map out the governmental money by place and relate that and intersect it with the private and the corporate money by place. So I'm not used to encountering people in business who can do the same because, as I said, so many of the very wealthy have been disassociated. They're at the top of corporations. They're at the top of banking. And they're really not interested in the day-to-day pennies, dimes, and nickels. You know, I was always amazed in New York. I was one of those people. I would always lean over and pick up a penny, and it was amazing to me how many pennies I could pick up in a day. Buffett and his partner, Charlie Munger, who's the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, are clearly very grounded and very interested in every aspect of every business. It's quite remarkable. What's amazing about them is they built a model, which I think is brilliant, because it arbitrages the financial side with the real side and sort of plays the cash flows back and forth between the two sides in a way that really is quite clever. They've used insurance and built an insurance business that generates essentially free capital to get the flow of premiums that need to be invested. And Buffett has used that capital to make equity investments, buying very long-term opportunities at unique moments, both in the public market and private companies. He does both, and it's created quite a complex structure, but it makes sense. If you look at his back and forth between the insurance and the financial side and the basic businesses, Buffett is now very uniquely positioned to execute on the re-engineering of places. He's got not only insurance, he's got municipal bond insurance, he's got municipal bond portfolios. The municipal credits can often be a control position, particularly if the municipality is in trouble. The insurance gives you very unique access and information on a place. He's now building real estate brokerages all across the country. Of course, he's got Clayton Homes, Benjamin Moore Paints. Now he's got Heinz Food. He's got Pampered Chef. It's quite remarkable. So places can be re-engineered both for the re-engineering of government money and the introduction of new technology and flipping to an equity model. There are lots of different opportunities, but Buffett is uniquely positioned, and Berkshire Hathaway is uniquely positioned to execute on that, and it's quite remarkable. That means he is in a very unique position, if he can pull it off, to significantly increase Berkshire Hathaway's equity values and do it in a way that could make a different, significant difference to the future of America. So I find that intriguing, and I'm going to sort of keep an eye on what he's up to. If you're interested in investments, studying Buffett's investment history and philosophy is very much worth your time, because it will show you a model that can work successfully on both sides of the balance sheet and make money in and be equally adept in global markets and local markets. So in short, it's grounded, it works across the full ecosystem, and it's seasoned by the combination of successes and failures that mark all successful investment portfolios and business careers. One of the things that's interesting to see is see Buffett navigate his way through numerous failures. And it just goes to show you got to keep getting up at bat and keep learning. Okay, so Bloomberg's Game Changer series on Warren Buffett, documentary of the week. And if you're interested in investment philosophy, it's worth taking a look. Our interview this week is with Chuck Gibson. It's the quarterly equity overview. It's we do two things. One is an assessment of just a roundup on the first quarter. Very choppy, very interesting, but very choppy. Kind of a sideways market. It's the sideways market that Chuck and I talked about, I think it was about a year and a half ago, on the equity overviews. And then Chuck made a very interesting introductory presentation on intermarket analysis, which is really about the analysis of relationship between financial markets. And Chuck and I love talking about this stuff, so we had fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. We have 25 charts, great charts if you're interested in getting a real framework on the market. So check out the interview. It's up on the blog. In closing, coming up next week, I'm going to be talking with Henri Pahlgrim, who's the proprietor of Red Ice Radio. Red Ice Creations, one of my favorite radio shows on the internet. He's going to be the moderator for the Secret Space Program. So we're talking about the Secret Space Program and the conference coming up in June. Then May 23rd, Deep Survival with Lawrence Gonzalez. May 29th, a very interesting interview. Peter Gerlinek is joining us to talk about music writing and the creative process. Peter is the author of the best biography I've ever read, Last Train to Memphis, on Elvis Presley. Peter is really renowned as the leading writer on American music. Not only written the definitive biography of Elvis Presley, but of Sam Cooke, Robert Johnson, and many other great musicians. So we're particularly looking forward to that one. So until May 15th on the Secret Space Program, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.